Welcome to SBC This Week. I'm Brandon Porter. Laura Erlinson is here with me. Laura, how's it going?
It's good. And here we are once again.
Yeah. We are. Yep. So I don't wear, at the EC, they give us some shirts, some polo shirts to wear during the annual meeting, like while we're setting up and things like that. We don't wear them on the, you know, like on the official days, that sort of thing. But anyway, so just to help get in the mood, I have felt the need to pull out my, what color is that one from Anaheim? Is it teal, turquoise?
I would call it turquoise. Yeah, okay. The Anaheim one.
Yeah.
And so today you're wearing the New Orleans one.
I am. I have the purple one on. So for me to wear, you said turquoise, right? I can't, that never sticks. Turquoise and purple are not colors that are in my wardrobe very routine very often. So
well, let me just say, this year for the first time they offered women's cut shirts. I never wear my polos after the annual meeting because they are so big and boxy because they're cut for men, but this year they have a women's cut. So I have not tried on the one for Indianapolis yet, but I imagine that once, even after the annual meeting's over, I'll probably still wear my shirt because it actually looks like it's made for a woman.
Big and boxy. I'm not sure if I should take offense at that or not. So
no offense about that. No offense intended whatsoever.
No offense to you big and boxy guys out there. Well, so, and Laura, another thing we need to maybe address is we're here. Dr. Orge started this week. Maybe some folks expected Jonathan and Amy Whitfield to return to the podcast this week.
Yes.
And yet here we are. And so at least through annual meeting, it looks like you and I are going to be carrying the torch for SBC this week. And then we'll see what happens at that point going forward.
Yeah, which is great. It's been fun. I've enjoyed it. And so, you know, I'm happy to keep doing it. And I know, you know, we're just giving the people what they want, Brandon.
That's right. That's us. Oh, goodness. Making people happy every day.
That's what we do.
Oh, goodness. Well, I tell you what, it has been a happy week at the EC, just to touch on it for a second. Dr. Orge has had a great first week, I think, with the staff there. Just really a gift from God to us. And so there's been some public interaction with him. He's been having meetings with staff members, and he is busy. People have asked me, what's he doing this week? He is thinking about Indianapolis, and he's working hard to get up to speed and get everything that he needs to get prepared to serve Southern Baptist well there. And he's trying to get to know our staff. And I would say from what I've seen, those are some of the primary things that have been on his agenda. And it's been
absolutely
great.
Yeah, we've all had, I think almost all of us have had individual meetings with him one-on-one this week. Mm-hmm. There may be a few that haven't had that chance yet, and we'll do it soon. But yeah, it's been great. He's got a huge learning curve, I'm sure, but he has hit the ground running. So it's good.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, let's get rolling with the news. We are coming sort of to the end of the trustee meeting season as we prepare to wrap up these springtime meetings and head toward the annual meeting. But Laura, we had a big one this week, a very exciting meeting for the International Mission Board, where they approved 83 fully funded missionaries for appointment.
It's the good stuff, man. This is what it's all about.
Absolutely. I love that it's 83. I love that the words fully funded follow the number 83. So just a fantastic report from Richmond, where trustees met there.
And those missionaries will actually be commissioned, if you will, or sent at the annual meeting in Indy. Mm-hmm. So they approved them at the trustee meeting, but instead of having a sending celebration as part of that trustee meeting, they are saving that for us all to be a part of it in Indy. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty exciting.
Absolutely. So Dr. Chitwood, he had quite a report for trustees. Why don't you share, Laura, some of that data that he shared about the gospel work that is going on through the IMB?
Yeah, so they released their sort of annual report this time of year, and this is some of the statistics that he hit. There is gospel work in 155 countries.
Wow.
More than 451,000 people heard a complete gospel presentation last year through the work of IMB. 141,000 professed faith in Christ.
Amen.
800,000 heard the gospel online through a video that they watched the vast majority of the video. They had to make it to at least 95% in order to be counted. So that was, I mean, 800,000 people. That's astounding.
A lot. Mm-hmm.
117,000 new believers were baptized through the work of IMB missionaries.
Yeah.
And so those are some pretty incredible numbers. And we are, all of us that give to CP or give to Lottie Moon, we're a small part of that. So
that's right.
It's fun to think about.
Absolutely. Love being a part of that partnership. Transparency in the SBC, a call for greater transparency, taking a look at transparency. That's something that is, you know, as we've written the articles on SBC presidential candidates over the last few weeks and done those interviews. It's just something that's being talked about in a lot of circles, and Dr. Chitwood is well aware of that. And so in the story from Richmond, he listed the ways that the IMB provides financial accountability to Southern Baptists. And so Dr. Chitwood talked about IMB's unredacted, independent external audits, he said, stating income, expenditures, debts, reserves, and operating balances. He says all of those are available for public viewing in the SBC Book of Reports and at imb.org/impact. He also talked about how they operate in compliance with the standards of the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability, ECFA. You see that logo in different places.
Mm-hmm.
That ensures that the organization adheres to the industry standards for Christian organizations, including standards regarding executive compensation. He also talked about how each year the chair of the IMB's Board of Trustees submits a statement referenced in the SBC's Book of Reports that confirms the compensation of the IMB's president is incurred to accomplish IMB's mission statement and ministry assignment with no impropriety. And then also he talked about how salary structures for the president are set by IMB trustees through a series of evaluations and recommendations, he said, before being presented to the full board for approval, independent of influence by the president or any other IMB executive. And so he talks about that, goes on. There's a quote here, in these and many other ways, the IMB conducts its financial business above reproach and in full view of trustees appointed to represent Southern Baptist and ensure the integrity of the operations of the IMB. You can read that full story. There's a lot more to it, and I'm not going to read it all to you, but you can find that Baptist Press. It came out earlier this week. Laura, I just referenced the presidential candidates. So last week we had three of those interviews to be published. So far this week, we're recording this about midday on Friday, May the 17th, and David Allen and Dan Spencer's interviews and videos have all been published this week. And when we finished recording this podcast, I'm going to go back and finish the Bruce Frank.
Yes, I've been waiting on it.
I'm working on it.
Clock is ticking.
I had a podcast to record. So we're hoping to have that out. Lord willing, we'll have it today on Friday, and that video will be there as well. That you said the clock is ticking. That makes my heart beat faster.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Okay. I was excited to do those interviews. So
yeah, you did a great job. Yep.
I made my debut on Baptist Press this week.
You did.
On video interviews. So.
That's right.
It was
right.
A lot of fun. Everybody was very nice to me.
Yep. It's very, very good. So yeah, I've been thinking about that since you said it. So Laura did three of the video interviews and I did three of the video interviews. Joe McKeever, who has the cartoon in the morning briefing that Jonathan sends out every morning. Joe McKeever, longtime Southern Baptist pastor, leader, associational director, jolly good fellow all the way around.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he is a cartoonist. And if you ever see Joe McKeever, you will have your caricature drawn.
Yeah, I have several. Yeah.
But where I'm going with all this, Joe McKeever has called Laura forever that girl singer, right? Is that right?
That is what he calls me, indeed.
Yeah. Because Laura has if you'll just look up Laura Erlinson on YouTube, you'll know what I'm talking about.
My stage name is not Erlinson, so you won't find me.
Well, that's true. It's Allen, isn't it? Laura Allen. So yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that. Anyway, I've been thinking about you being called the girl singer, and I thought, well, we need to change that now. She's the girl anchor.
There you go. I like it.
Yeah,
the girl anchor. I even had my highlights done last week because I think all anchors are supposed to be blonde.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
But it was really fun. I really enjoyed it. But I feel like they were they were easy on me. I didn't have to, ask any really hard questions, make anybody mad at me. So
Yeah, you
it
did
was
a good
fine.
job. You
Yeah.
did a good job.
Well,
So,
thank you.
All right. Well, as we think about presidential candidates, brings to mind annual meeting, reminds us of that Tuesday night session that's coming when the presidential candidates will be voted on, Lord willing. And also, Laura, on that Tuesday night, we will hear from the GCR Evaluation Task Force. And their report came out this week. The first part, we're waiting on recommendations, but the first part of their report came out this week.
Yes, and we had a great story from Scott Barkley sort of summarizing that report. It's the report is long, and Scott's story is long, longer than a typical Baptist Press story, but also but very approachable. It helps just kind of summarize that report. But I would encourage you to read both, read the story and read the full report, because if you're especially if you're going to be a messenger, you're going to need to know these things and be prepared as you go, prepared to hear their recommendations. And so, yeah, be looking for that. And then you interviewed Jay Adkins
Sure did.
about this thing, and that's going to play at the end of this podcast. Is that
That's right.
right? Yeah.
You're just moments away from that
Okay.
interview.
Yeah,
So
great. I'm excited to
hold
hear it.
on. It's a coming. All right. Speaking of those annual meeting events, the pastor's conference preview is out. And this is something that's not really been done too much in the past, but Stephen Rumage has developed it's a podcast on video. So
Yeah,
I don't know what that's
video
called.
podcast. You call them
Okay.
video podcasts, right? Yeah.
Basically, he's
Yeah.
interviewing many of the folks who are going to be preaching at the pastors' conference, and we've watched a few of those, and the ones that we've seen have been very inspiring themselves. Just the interviews themselves have been very encouraging, and so we want to point you to that, and you can find that on the Quail Springs Baptist Church YouTube page. We've got a link and a story that we wrote at Baptist Press that will get you there. Laura, the theme for the pastor's conference is Faithful, Pursuing Your Mission, and it's based on Revelation 17:14. Why don't you quickly tell us who those pastors and speakers are coming to the pastor's conference?
Adam Dooley, pastor of Englewood Baptist Church in Jackson, Tennessee, not to be confused with Englewood with an I Baptist Church, where I go in Nashville, Tennessee, different Englewood. Steve Gaines at Bellevue in Memphis, Jack Graham at Prestonwood in Dallas, James Noble, Kingdom Community Church of Anderson, South Carolina, Bartholomew Orr, Brown Missionary Baptist Church in South Haven, Mississippi, and Jimmy Scroggins, Family Church in South Florida. So those are the pastors that will be speaking, but then some men that are not pastors but also but leaders in their own right are that will be speaking. Greg Mann, who is an affinity group leader with IMB, Shane Pruitt, the Next Gen director for the North American Mission Board, Robert Smith Jr., who we just talked about last week, I think.
That's
Was
right.
that last week? Who just retired from Beeson Divinity School, who's a preacher extraordinaire.
Absolutely.
Benny Wong, Chinese English bilingual director at Gateway Seminary, and Herschel York, professor of preaching at Southern Seminary and pastor, or he's actually retired
He
pastor
is
now, Buck Run, right? Yeah.
just a minute ago. Just
Yeah.
back in May, I think. No, it was earlier. It was
Yeah, it was
earlier in the
maybe a,
year.
yeah, but
Yeah.
not too long ago.
Yeah.
And then worship at the pastor's conference will be led by none other than Charles Billingsley. So, that'll be really good. I'm excited
Yeah.
about that.
Yep, absolutely. Laura, we've had one new nomination to be made known publicly, and that is Chris Bolt, who is a pastor of theology and apologetics at Village Church in North Chesterfield, Virginia. He will be nominated to be 2025 SBC Pastors Conference president. He joins Brad Whitt from Georgia, who has all it's also been made known that Dean and Sarah is going to nominate him. And so those are the two known
And D
candidates.
DJ Horton too. There's one other. DJ Horton is
Oh,
also
okay.
a
Sorry.
candidate.
Yeah.
Yeah,
All right.
but it
Very
was
good.
I had initially had forgotten about him because he was nominated back in February. I'm like, well, golly, so much has happened since February. I
Yeah.
forgot about him.
All
Yeah,
right.
yeah.
Well, sorry about that. All right. We also have a crossover preview. Lots of exciting things going on this year in crossover, maybe highlighted by a student rally. You mentioned Shane Pruitt speaking at the pastor's conference. He's also going to be kind of the key speaker at a youth rally, a student rally, June 8th at Harvest Church, which is near Carmel, Indiana. So looking forward to that. And then Laura, there are a good number of crossover events. You can get the information in the story, or you could go to nam.net/ crossover. Why don't you
And
talk
there's
to
a way
us?
for you to sign up too there at
Oh, fantastic.
bam.net/crossover for you to sign up for your church or even as an individual for whatever event that you might want to help out with. So
Yeah,
pretty
fantastic.
exciting. Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about the music.
I love this story. We did, Baptist Press did not originate this story, but Southwestern Seminary did. And I took it and ran it on BP because I thought it was so cool. So the music this year at the annual meeting, that's always a big deal, you know, because it's a huge undertaking to plan probably 40 or 50 songs, I would think, over the course of a couple of days, because you have several different worship sessions that are each 15, 20 minutes or whatever. So you need a bunch of songs to fill that time. And so just the amount of thought that goes into that, the amount of rehearsal that goes into that, and organization, logistics, all that. And so the team that's doing that this year is the Southwestern Seminary Music Department, led by Joseph Kreider, who is the over that department at Southwestern. And a few weeks ago, he was interviewed by Jonathan on the Road to Indy podcast. And that's a great interview if you haven't had a chance to go watch that. But then Southwestern wrote a story, just an interview with him, kind of just talking about what all they've been through. He said he has lost track of the hours of rehearsal time, but our students will come back from their summer break for three major rehearsals on campus, totaling around 20 hours of intense rehearsals in preparation for our ministry in Indianapolis. So they're already on summer break, but they got to come back three times to rehearse before they go to Indianapolis. But he said for him, it's something that God has used to build Christ's kingdom, and the Southern Baptist Convention is. And so he just hopes that students see that and hopes that they get just a glimpse of that cooperation of the SBC. And for him, it's just about that. It's about helping people get in the right frame of mind through worship to participate in that, and for the students to see that and be a part of that. And so it was really a neat interview, and I loved kind of just reading about the almost how the sausage is made a little bit for how much work really goes into planning music for the annual meeting. You know, if I've often thought, like, if I were doing that, what songs would I pick? You know, like, I have my list of my favorites that I would want to do, or ones that I think people would really love to sing, or whatever. So it's just kind of fun to think about.
Awesome. Resolutions portal is coming to an end
Yeah.
May the 22nd, so just right around the corner. The portal remains open through 11:59 p.m. on May the 22nd. A new process for the resolutions, where they are that they will be made available in a preliminary form no later than 10 days prior to the SBC annual meeting. And so the resolutions committee actually has a meeting within the next week or so, in Oklahoma City. And so that's a different process than we've had before. And it's in an effort to get those resolutions to the messengers. The messengers ask for that. The messengers made a change, in the process. And so, here it is, and we're living it out and seeing it go into action, of how we can get those resolutions into the hands of messengers before the annual meeting, and they will have an opportunity to read those and be prepared to make informed choices when it comes to them. Laura, a big thing happened in Washington, D.C. this week. A statue of Billy Graham was unveiled on Thursday, which is May the 16th, in the statutory, is that what it's called? Statutory?
Statuary
Statuary.
Hall.
Yeah, that's one of those words that. And I feel weird because that's usually a crime word, you know.
Statutory, not
I know,
statutory.
I know. So it trips me up a little bit.
Statuary.
I know. Sorry. So the preachers out there will understand. There are just some words when it comes on the manuscript, you have to be very careful. And
Yes, yeah, for real. Yeah.
I just blew that one all to smithereens. So sorry about that.
Well, it's okay. It's okay.
Okay.
You
All
don't
right.
say the word statuary very often. In fact,
No.
this may be the only time that I have ever used the word statuary is in reference to Statuary Hall in the U.S. Capitol. So
Yeah. Well,
it's not one that you encounter very much.
Billy Graham has a statue there,
He does
is the
as
bottom
of
line. That's
Thursday.
right.
He does. And it's a big deal. It's really cool because there's only 100. Each state gets two. And North Carolina decided to replace one that they had had of a former leader there
Governor,
who was
yep.
kind of a known white supremacist, and they decided that we don't want to give him this honor anymore, and they switched it out with a statue of Billy Graham. And so Baptist Press had a great article. Diana Chandler wrote such a great article about it, and about how the gospel was presented in the Capitol building on Thursday at this unveiling ceremony. And Baptist Press had a photographer there. We got some beautiful photos. Of course, the entire Graham family was there. The Franklin Graham spoke. The Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, who's also a Southern Baptist, spoke. And the whole North Carolina delegation was there, like the governor, both senators, several representatives. Like there was North Carolina represented. And it was just really neat. The statue, you need to go look at pictures of it. It's like 7 feet tall. And his Bible is open. He's holding a Bible and he's gesturing. And it's supposed to be open to Galatians 6:14, which was like his life verse. May I never boast except in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ.
That's
So I
good.
just thought, what a cool, I mean, that's pretty amazing. And Billy Graham is one of only four people to have received all of the nation's three highest honors, and that is the Congressional Gold Medal, lying in state after their death, and having a statue in the in Statuary Hall. And the others are Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, and Rosa Parks. So,
Wow.
pretty good company.
Absolutely. So very, very excited to see that happen this week. All right. Well, stay with us on the other side of Jay Atkins. We're going to hear our history moment. But for now, we're going to invite Jay Atkins to come in and join us as we talk about the GCR, the Evaluation Task Force, and the work that they did. Well, Jay, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us on SBC This Week.
Happy to do it, Brandon. This is I love SBC This Week, and I'm happy to be able to share what I can with you.
So as I think about this report, I think about some times in seminary when, you dread that research that needs to go into a project. And there are two ways to go. You either get into the research and you find that I really enjoy this. This is interesting. Or you get into the research and you just want it to be over as quickly as possible. Or I
Oh
guess
boy.
maybe there's a little bit of in the middle.
Yeah.
Where were you in this process? Because I mean, this has been a year in the works, I mean,
Yeah.
practically.
Yeah. Almost a year. By the time we got everything organized and our president had appointed the folks, it's been the majority of 10 months at least, a little more than that, of the actual getting in and rolling with it. So let me see how I can describe this to you, because it has been a little bit in the same way that you just described. It's been some really very, for those of us that are kind of geeking Baptist geeks, it's been really intriguing. And yet at the same time, some of the material, I mean, I'll be honest with you, Brandon, it's just it has been overwhelming to us. We have spent so much time. Let me start here by saying, and I mentioned this in the report, in the introduction of the report, when Bart brought this to me, he, was basically saying, "Here, this is. I would like for you to serve as a chair here." And I was like, "Bart, please no. Let's go in some other direction." And he said, "I really feel like you should do this. I'm asking you to pray about it." So I prayed about it, came back to him, and of course, then immediately he was like, "Okay, now explain to me how you're going to move forward." And I was like, "Oh, you're supposed to tell me that." But I wrote out a couple of pages of a little white paper to share with him how I thought we would move forward, and I explained that in the notes there. I felt like it was prudent. The best way forward was to dissect the seven components. And that was the way I thought that we could best get to the material, get to the specifics. Clearly, there was going to be, I mean, we needed as much quantitative material as we could, because that's where the actual numbers are. But we also knew there was going to be a component of this that's going to be qualitative, that we were going to have to say things as the material was presented, and then we assess it and digest it and regurgitate it. We're going to have to say some things too. So being qualitative and quantitative, when I realized how much quantitative it was going to be, I mean, that, like, just as I know your readers can't see it, or the listeners can't see it, but like, here, this is a short, I'm showing him right now this
Big notebook.
Yeah, this giant notebook. And it is
heard it. Bare... You just heard it thump on the desk.
Okay. I didn't know if you picked that up. It is just a sliver of the material we ended up going through. Mm-hmm. I mean, Baptist Press themselves had far over 150 articles. There were journals besides the interviews we did. So to answer long story short, to answer your question, it was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. The more we looked at it, the more was intriguing. I'll say it that way, because we saw things, you know, I've been around and been involved for years that I saw things I didn't know. I just, I had no clue of some of that material. And so it was interesting to hear from the interviewees, to hear from both the formal ones and the informal ones, their varying perspectives and ideas and opinions. It really was like drinking from a fire hydrant. It was a lot of material.
Mm-hmm. How did the task force work to remain objective as they gathered the data and then processed it?
So that was one of the things I was most concerned about to begin with. In fact, this is what I told Bart just informally. It's probably going to be in some of the papers that I'll end up submitting to the Historical Library and Archives. But one of the things I said, man, we really need to be very careful about this. I told him a couple of points. Number one, I felt like we needed folks that were at least researchers, PhD level researchers, and all of us have had experience in the PhD programs. And so I thought that was important, because going through that rigor in our seminaries and degree program, you learn to a degree how to shut out, to take your lenses off and try to shut out the things that are gonna, the noise, and really deal with the facts. So number one, I felt like we needed research oriented people. Number two, I told Bart that we really didn't need any, on the one hand, fanboys, and on the other, antagonists. So right off the bat, we just really wanted to stay away from the fringes. And I mean that without any derogatory. I just wanted us to have some guys who I knew were going to have their own unique, deliberate, and specific opinions. And yet at the same time could engage with factual material and set aside any proclivities we might have in one direction or another. And let me just say, I'm actually a bit stunned as to what a good job Bart did in selecting these guys that I had the privilege of working with. I'm telling you, to a person. Now, let me just be very, very clear. All six of us have very strong opinions about a number of things. But this was a unanimous report. And what I mean by that is we some of us had to set aside and really try to think through how we were going to be fair, how we're going to walk through this, looking at the material, what we're going to take from it, how we can articulate it. And it was difficult. So to answer your question, it was a constant reminder of things like, you know, we have to be able to engage with verifiable factual data that we can assimilate into a digestible report that does the job we were asked to do without bias, without any sort of implicit or explicit agendas. I told the guys as a group, we are not going to deal with agendas here. That's not going to happen. We're going to try to get to the facts and lay out what we need. So it was a challenge, but it wasn't as big a challenge, Brandon, as I thought it was going to be, because each of these men, just top-notch researchers, top-notch communicators. I mean, when we began the process, and I don't know if that I said this, we divided up early on, I divided up the components and then kind of doled them out to the guys, asked if they had any opinions, and shared, you know, assigned certain components to each of the fellas. And then so we each did the like lion's share of the work early. And then all of us had input on all seven components and what we would go from there. And so they just did a fantastic job. Without bias, balanced, thorough. I'm so very proud of them, and they've become good friends now. It's been a blessing.
Good. As you think about that, I'm looking at the report here just right beside me, and I'm looking at the components, I'm looking at the evaluation, looking at the observation. What's something that jumps out at you that was a surprise, maybe along the way or maybe in the final report? What surprised you?
The biggest surprise, the thing that really honestly shocked me, was that only two of the seven components were ever fully implemented. I really was stunned. The first time we heard that was one of the formal interviews, and I'm not sure. I want to be careful. I'm not going to say who or how, because the formal interviews were private on purpose. We deliberately chose not to record them.
Right, you talked about that in the report.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so those were private interviews. But the first time we heard it from someone, the individual said, not all of those were fully implemented. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And then when we started getting into it, to realize, honestly, the only two that were ultimately implemented, I mean ultimately fully implemented, were the two related to the North American Mission Board and then the IMB, and North American Mission Board on one of the components, and then the component that talked about the interaction between the IMB and NAM. Those were the two that were implemented, and the others, as try as they might, apparently, and some of them weren't tried very hard, it appears, they just ended up not being implemented. And that was I was stunned by that. That was the big one for me. That was the big takeaway. I assume that's going to be the big takeaway for a lot of folks. There were some things that I want to say I knew, but I understood, or I thought, that were validated. There were some things that I kind of felt like I had a sense of that were validated through our research. And then there were things that were just surprising. And it's quite a, let's see, how do I say this? The interviews themselves were so tremendously helpful and so insightful from the different people that we interviewed. Again, I think I mentioned there, we had 12 formal interviews and then just dozens and dozens of informal interviews where the committee members themselves spoke with people individually and that sort of thing. The formal ones were interviews where we did Zoom or in person, and everybody was either present or had access to engage in that process. And so those were the formal ones. The informal ones, all of them were just very insightful. Let me give an informal shout out to someone who was very helpful here, and that was Amy Whitfield. Was super helpful. I had some questions about her book that was helpful there, and so just incredibly informal, incredibly informative, and at some points very surprising.
So you referred to Amy's book there, the SBC FAQ book. And I think about how helpful that's been to me and to other Southern Baptists over the last few years to understand how the SBC works, if you will. Yes. And I'm using my air quotes here.
Yeah.
And when I think about that, I think about the messengers, that ultimately our goal is to serve the messengers. And so one of the things that I've wondered about with the task forces that we've had over these last few years is the task force goes off and they do their work, they do the research, they do the dialogue, the debate, then they write the report. But then they've got to bring recommendations that honor all that has been accomplished, but they also want to bring recommendations that the messengers can sort of sink their teeth into quickly. Because really, I mean, you've had 10 months to work on this and to think about this, and then the messengers get it and they've got weeks. And that's a messenger who's reading Baptist Press, who's reading other places, who's paying attention to this, reading the report itself. Sometimes folks don't really start paying attention to it until they start putting their stuff in the bag to go to the annual meeting.
That's right.
How do you balance that between, and I mean, I'm really not asking very philosophical. I'm asking practical. I'm not pushing you to tip your hand on what the recommendations are, but maybe just help us understand, how do you bridge that together in the recommendations that you guys are planning to bring?
I appreciate that, Brandon. Thank you for asking it in that way. So here's where we are right now. In fact, we have a meeting. Our task force has a meeting tomorrow. We were talking about the idea that for the most part, we think the hard part's finished, the report. We deliberately made the decision to follow this particular pattern. We wanted to make sure that the report got out. Number one, and in that, we thought through what was how could we best digest not just the report that we've been going through forever and then have been asked to make recommendations. Early on, you know, I kind of told the guys, I'm not sure that I want us to be in the process of making recommendations. The more we got into it, the more I realized, okay, it's probably for the benefit of the messengers. We are probably going to need to make some recommendations. We needed more time. That was one of the reasons that I wanted to get the report out at least a month before the convention. And I think we got into that within a day. We got that out. It was published on Monday. I turned that in on Friday, the 10th. So that the report would be out, so that people could begin to digest, if they're interested, they begin to digest that. I knew we needed some more time on the resolutions or the recommendations that we're going to make. I also just realized that we were literally studying seven recommendations that were voted on, and two of them did anything. And so, with Baptist, you know, one of the things I've realized, Brandon, you know this, we do a lot of talking. Sometimes we don't do a lot of doing. And we want to be, we want to be as thorough as we can without becoming a new Great Commission Resurgence task force that it's trying to change things. That's not our intention. Our intention is to look to see where are evidential things, maybe some things that we've stumbled upon that maybe aren't as evidential that we might need to share with the body to give them. And it's their choice. The key phrase is, we're just making recommendations. The body gathered in Indianapolis will make the ultimate decisions on any of these things. Mm-hmm. And our job is to, and again, in a very deliberate and unbiased way, is to present those. We're meeting even tomorrow. We're taking the rest of the month of May to hammer out our recommendations. And then we hope to have, and if we're done before, we will get them out before, but our intention is to have them out at least a week before the convention so that they can at least be processed. Our hope was that everybody would really take seriously the report and maybe even see themselves some recommendations that they might suspect that are coming, or they might have some recommendations themselves as an individual messenger from one of our churches to bring. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of been our MO. That's the way that we're operating so that we can get we wanted the report to be out. We wanted people to be able to dissect it so that then they've had time to process it. When we present the recommendations, they'll say, oh, I see where this is. This makes sense because I was thinking similar, or I can see why they would say this. I don't think this is maybe something I want to vote for because ultimately it is up to them. That's kind of been our process.
I want to end here kind of a different spot. Before we started recording, we were talking about our kids, and I've got kids in college and that age, and kids in high school, and you've got kids college age. I remember back being a youth pastor, and when the senior pastor would say, "Oh, I went to seminary with that person," or you know, and it would make me think of a sentence that usually had the word old in it. And now I'm the guy who says, "Oh, I went to seminary with him." Yeah, and I realize I'm that guy now, you know? So I think about the meeting in Louisville in 2009, the meeting in Orlando in 2010. I remember being there. I remember the processes, but I'm also keenly aware that there will be messengers who were 12 years old when that happened, who were 15, they were a senior in high school when that happened. Yeah. And so they have begun to, they've maybe completed their seminary. They've begun to pastor, or maybe they're just starting to pastor. Maybe they've been in 5 or 6 years, but the things that we see as a result of the GCR, it's just the way it is to them. There is no before like there was to us.
Right.
Well, what would you say to those pastors, those church leaders of that younger generation who have, you know, in the last 14 years have come into church ministry, pastoral ministry, and they're going to be the messengers there in Indianapolis. What would you say to them as they try to wrap their head around the report and then what will come with the recommendations?
Oh, Brandon, that question might be more loaded than you intended it to be, at least from my perspective.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. You know, I was there and even spoke on the floor related to some of this in 10 in Orlando, and of course mm-hmm. was there in 9. And mm-hmm. so this has been part of my adult life,
right?
And so it's an interesting that you kind of go in this direction here about these folks who, you know, were in school when this was happening originally. You know, the fact of the matter is, historically, it behooves us all to remember that there was a world before us,
mm-hmm.
and all of us, historically speaking, there's a world before us. There's going to be a world after us. I want to speak in generality here. Regarding the report, I think that there were some well-meaning hopes behind the report. I think maybe there was some other things also behind the original intention of the report.
And when you say report, you mean the actual GCR of 2010?
I'm saying not
this
GCR.
Report, but back at 2010.
Correct, yeah. Correct. Thank you. And thank you for that clarification.
Sure, sure.
Because as they see our report, one of the component number two, that was an effort to talk about how we needed to be more truthful and transparent, and those traits, those qualities that we should hold. That was certainly a well-meaning thing. And yet in the intervening years since 2010, social media is a world in which we didn't know much about. I mean, it was, you know, Twitter started in what, 9?
Mm-hmm.
There was Facebook, but it was young. One of the things that I found as I was working on that particular component is the unfortunate nature of how we treat one another today, that not only was that component not really engaged, in many ways we kind of went in the opposite direction. I mean, there's a lot of speaking ill of one another. And I think these younger guys see through that stuff a lot more than we do. Yeah. I think a lot of them don't have time and don't want to deal with those sorts of things. They don't want a world, especially the kingdom of God, where people are acting this way, where it's more politicized than anything. I think those guys see through that. In a way, I'm a little bit jealous or envious of them, because not only are they growing up in a era which is, you know, truth itself is being questioned. You know, what is even truthful? How do we know something is true? Then we have these reports that are coming out about, you know, processing something that happened 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What I would want those younger folks to take from this is, you know, nothing is ever done in a vacuum. The world's larger than our little area. Some of the things that we deal with today are things that had its genesis many years ago, and we've got to learn to process that. And that's really what we were doing, is trying to figure out what happened and why and how, and what is that going to mean for us moving forward. I said in the introduction that I really did hope this report would be a balm and not a bomb. I've got mm-hmm. a lot of friends teasing me about that at this point, just mm-hmm. the use of, you know, my use, generally speaking, in my sermons of alliteration. But I really did mean that. I want this report, I want it to be seen by those of us who did know what was going on, that here's what it appeared was that has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Can we now get back to loving each other and moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
Can we see and admit that the SBC is not perfect,
mm-hmm.
that it's made up of imperfect people, and I'm the chief of those, and yet our job is to try to cooperate together for the glory of God and the advancement of his kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we, I think, all in our own way want to see done. We just have to do more listening to one another and less talking at one another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those younger guys see that I think that's the world in which they want to focus. Some of us older ones struggle with that from time. I'm going to use the word old. Some of us older ones struggle with that sometimes because we were kind of steeped in that world where there was a lot more politics and behind the scenes things and those sorts of things. I think these guys today are just tired of that. And rightfully so. And I hope that they are going to be encouraged by this. They might not understand all of it, but I hope that they'll be encouraged by what we're trying to do in maybe putting some things to rest and moving forward and in cooperation and agreement with one another. I'm a big fan of unity in diversity. And I don't mean just ethnic diversity. I mean in our diversity as Baptists. We have always been a broad spectrum of Baptists. Yes, we've always been that. There's always been the Reformed and the non-Reformed rails. There've always been these things. And I really hope that we can see that and continue to function in that and not continually narrow and I'm not even then I'm not talking politically. I'm just saying our job is to cooperate together, and I want us to focus on that as much as we can.
Good.
Sorry, I'm rambling a bit.
No, you're fine. No, I just paused to give, like, that gives me a good punch point. Is there anything else that you want to add?
I hope everyone who's listening will actually, I mean, as much as Scott's story was good in Baptist Press, read Scott's story, but I hope everyone will take the time to actually read the report. We spent an enormous amount of time doing this in hopes that it would bring honor to our Lord and bring some healing and peace and encouragement to the SBC. I really hope the messengers will prepare themselves and read that report, not just those who are the Baptist nerds who are really interested, but everyone. This is our work together. It's who we are as Southern Baptists. So I really want to encourage that, man. And then come Tuesday night, that Tuesday evening session is going to be, from what I'm told, it's going to be packed full of all sorts of really important reports and some important stuff to be in the room to digest and engage. So I'm looking forward to that time together.
So we really appreciate Jay Atkins taking some time to be with us on SBC this week. Earlier, we were talking about Washington, D.C. with the Billy Graham statue. Our history moment comes from Washington, D.C.
Yes, and from the same building, the very same place, from the Capitol building. Mm-hmm. So this was May 16th, 1920. I'm going to give a hat tip to some people on Twitter. I think I first saw it, maybe Luke Holmes had retweeted a tweet from Matthew Millsaps, and then last night it sort of just took on a life of its own, and lots of people started posting it. And I remember texting you, Brandon, and I was like, is it cheating if I use this as our history moment? And I didn't actually find it, but it's so cool that I want to use it. Yeah. And you said, sure, I can do it. So May 16th, 1920, George W. Truett, who was then the pastor of First Baptist Church, Dallas, Texas. The annual meeting, the SBC annual meeting, was going on in Washington, D.C. at this time. It was May 12 through 17, 1920, in D.C., which I'm lobbying for us to have it in
D.C. That'd be neat.
That would be really cool. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so we were there. And so he delivered a speech on the east steps of the Capitol. There was an estimated 15,000 people listening to his speech at 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, May 16th, 1920. The convention was not in session, but a lot of the people, therefore a lot of the people that were listening to the speech were people that were there to attend the meeting, but a lot of other people too. And it was about, specifically just about religious liberty and just about how Baptists, that's sort of came up with it, if you will. So I'm just going to read a few. It's a long speech. It would take me an hour to read the whole thing, maybe. But I'm just going to read a few little passages that I picked out that are really good. So this is George Truett, 1920, on the steps of the Capitol. He says, "On and on was the struggle waged by our Baptist fathers for religious liberty in Virginia, in the Carolinas, in Georgia, in Rhode Island, in Massachusetts, in Connecticut, and elsewhere, with one unyielding contention for unrestricted religious liberty for all men, and with never one wavering note. They dared to be odd, to stand alone, to refuse to conform, though it cost them suffering and even life itself. They dared to defy traditions and customs and deliberately chose the day of nonconformity, even though in many a case it meant a cross. They pleaded and suffered. They offered their protests and remonstrances and memorials. And thank God, mighty statesmen were won to their contention. Washington and Jefferson and Madison and Patrick Henry and many others, until at last it was written into our country's constitution that church and state must in this land be forever separate and free, that neither must ever trespass upon the distinctive functions of the other. It was preeminently a Baptist achievement.
Interesting, huh? Well worth diving into. And it's just sobering to hear
It
that,
is.
of the great sacrifice that so
It
often
is.
we take this liberty for granted, and we
It is.
should not.
And it's a legacy for us to keep. Now, he goes on to say that living in such a democracy that provides religious liberty can only be maintained when people obey the rule of law and when they adhere to a moral code.
Yeah.
And so it certainly doesn't come easy.
Yeah, absolutely. Even the reminder here, a democracy needs more than intelligence. It needs Christ.
Yes.
He is the light of the world, nor is there any other sufficient light for the world. He is the solution of the world's complex questions, the one adequate helper for its dire needs, the one only sufficient savior for our sinning race. You think about what Paul Chitwood says every time you hear him speak, the number one problem, the world's, greatest problem is lostness. And
Yeah, it's quite a speech. I would urge you to go read the whole thing. It's pretty astounding. And and it just kind of makes you proud to be a Southern Baptist. Like, this is, it's a legacy that honestly has influenced the whole world, that the call for religious liberty has been shouted the loudest by Baptists.
Well, that's a wonderful legacy. Thank you for bringing that to us, Laura. Very encouraging.
All right. Well, thank you. And here we are at the end. Thanks you to Jay Adkins for joining us and talking about the GCR Evaluation Task Force. We're getting down to the wire, less than a month away now to annual meeting time. So plenty to be informed about as you make your plans to come to Indy. And you can read about every bit of that and much more at baptistpress.com. Thanks for listening.